Now she herself had become somewhat braver when she gave care for one that was even smaller and more helpless. When we came closer to home, we crossed a shortcut through the woods, which I knew well. Here we had to go over a creek that was a bit bloated from a few days of rain. Violet took off socks and shoes, and stepped boldly into the water, but Anita started to cry and I had to carry her over. She put her little arms around my neck and pressed her curly head against my cheek. I was not little proud, when I put down my burden on the other beach and kissed her on the cheek. It was my first acquaintance with Anita. Since then we often met. She and Viola became good friends and I was knight for both. But childhood with its innocent games and play passed and we grew up, Anita into a light curly beautiful girl, I'm a dark-skinned strong youth. Viola was pale and translucent, gentle and quiet, in all respects complete unlike her brother. When I had obtained the knowledge the small village school could give, father sent me to a larger school in Geneva. The boy shall not be as ignorant as his father was, he said. His ambition was hoping that I would become a priest in the Catholic Church. But father soon died, and I was not yet 24 years old, when I had to interrupt my studies and move back home to take over the farm. Where is Anita? I have not seen her since I got home. I asked one day my sister. She will be visiting her future in-laws, one man at Bonneville. Yes, you've probably heard that she's engaged. What do you say? Engaged? Impossible. Yes, so it might be. The father must be very wealthy, and the son, who is a young boy, has turned the head of Anita with expensive gifts and pretenses and the riches she shall receive. But that's impossible, she has promised. Yes, I could see it was something between you and she, though neither of you have said anything. I cannot deny that I was a little afraid of that party, because I do not think she is the one who can make you happy, but I've seen how you always looked for each other, and how happy you looked when your eyes rested on her. But are you quite sure of what you're saying? Yes, Anita was herself here. It was shortly before the father died, and had her fiancé with her, and it was so sweet between them. God's cross. We will see about that. For God's sake, what do you intend to do? Ask her to admit, inform that she's let me down, and turn the legs of the scoundrel, if he comes my way. So, calm down now. You can do nothing about that. It becomes my business. And moreover, I would almost like to congratulate you to have been spared the one who could forget you for that money hunter. You do not understand such Viola. You do not know how it burns my chest when I think that another would. No, she is mine, and my will she be, and there is no cure for it. Do you know when she comes back? If not sooner, she will be at her brother's wedding. You know but poor she'll marry a girl from one of the neighboring farms? It'll be a great wedding early next month, and we're already asked to come by. Then, well he also. What's his name? His name is Arnold Schaefer, his family said to be from Switzerland. Yes, probably he will come with. Good. Dear Antonio, be careful. It is best that you do not join the wedding. You do not know me, Antonio. It was a great wedding. Guests had gathered from all over the valley and even from afar. The sun was burning hot. With bagpipes in the lead went the wedding train back from church and whirled up a cloud of dust behind on the road. Now it would be fun and games in the main cabin on Boise. What she was beautiful as she walked in the second rank among the closest relatives, with the rich hair in long blonde curls around the neck and shoulders. Next to her, her fiancé, this Arnold Schaefer, that I with all my soul hated. His costume stood out from our national costumes, he wore ruffles that stretch, and in his hand he held a long Spanish tube with gold buttons. Wait, you boy, we should probably talk before the party is ended. The wedding banquet is over. The wine bottles has frequently been around and the atmosphere is excited and cheerful. Guests go out in the yard to cool off. I see Anita go alone up to the loft, I run up the stairs after her, into her chamber and twist-locked the door behind us. "Finally I have you here alone, you sweetheart." Before she could say a word, I had thrown my arms around her, pulled her to me so hard that she sat as in a vice and I pressed a kiss on her red lips. "What do you do?" "Let me go," she gasped and put a couple of frightened eyes in me. "What I want?" It was a question. "I want to own you. You are mine, mine and nobody else's. So you promised me, and I will demand of thee, though I will fight for you against the whole world." She started crying and looked so helpless that I almost felt sorry for her. "I cannot help it, Antonio," she sobbed. "I thought you had forgotten me when you had not written to me for half a year. Then came Arnold and wowed you with his gold. I understand that. But now it will be the end of your connection to him, that shopkeeper, and so now this day, you must understand. You have never loved him, have you? Antonio. Have mercy on me. It's just that I have when I save you from falling into the arms of that dandy. Antonio. I cannot." "Yes, you can and you must already now in this day tell him that. That. Yes, he may go his own way, and you can tell him from me that he can be happy if he comes unharmed from here. But Antonio. You might say that you love him? Then I say, it's a lie. You have never loved anyone but me, myself, Antonio, and you love me yet, you cannot deny that." I had like stormed almost feral, but now relented meeting, I stretched her arms towards her and prayed with eye looks and words, "Come on, you are my most expensive. I want to make you happy, I will carry you on my hands." She fell into my arms, leaned her head against my chest, but could not of the sobs, utter a word. Someone took the door lock and soon after were heard a knocking. We stood in silence. Someone took in the handle yet again. I went and opened the door. It was Arnold Schaefer. He measured me with a glance of deepest contempt and wanted to push me aside, and passed to Anita. "No, sir," I cried, and took him by the arm a little harsh, "Anita, you do you not touch, if you want to have arms and legs intact. She belongs to me by an old promise." He broke free and gave me a shove in the chest. "Out of the way, farmer," he roared quite pale with anger. But with a leap I was over him, grabbed him by the throat and beat him to floor so that he fell with a thud, which surely was heard throughout the house. As soon as I got him down, I was calm. "Do you understand now that the wisest thing you can do is to immediately go away and never more show you here in our valley? It could bring you very badly." He gasped and groaned but could not utter a word. Anita had huddled in a corner and hid her face in her hands. Some wedding guests came rushing in. "What's going on? What has happened?" "Nothing," I replied calmly, while I got up and let go of my rival. "It's only Mr. Schaefer who suddenly becomes sick and must travel from here. I will help him to span the horse." I took him by the arm and led him down the stairs, out into the yard and down to the stables. He did not say a word, just glared at me with angry eyes. I sat on the horse and got him up in the stroller. He obeyed me without the least resistance, but once he got the ropes in his hands, he struck me with his whip over my head so that my hat fell off. "Wait you," he shouted, "we'll hit again." And he went off as fast the horse could run. It was a long time ago before I saw Anita. She had become ill, it was said, but also when she recovered, she did not show out. Viola, who was heartbroken over what I'd done, sought her out, but only got tears to answer of all questions. I myself was probably a bit ashamed of my prank, but at the same time, I was fully convinced of the merits of my actions, and above all, I was certain that it was Anita's best, for she'd never be happy with that man. When some time had passed, we would marry and then there would be no further thinking of the story. Even now, there were many, especially among the younger men, who thought that I acted absolutely right. The elders shook their heads and called me wild man. The worst thing was to appease Anita's father, a greedy old man, who having seen in grief, his dream of a rich son-in-law going down, But my plan was nearing completion. His and our vineyards bordered on each other, and he had several times requested to purchase a little good fields that bordered next to his property, but father had always said number a few months after weather wedding. It was in the fall just before the grape harvest, I went over to the old man, met him alone and began tentatively talking about the prospect of a good wine harvest. He was very taciturn, and I felt all too well that I was not a welcome guest. "Yes, you get good enough, especially on the piece that is closest to us," he said. I stood completely unaware of this piece was better than the other grounds. "I hardly think so," I replied. "The bit is too far from the farm, so is difficult to salvage. I would not mind selling it if anyone wanted it." The old man's face brightened. "How much, then?" he asked in a tone as he tried to stay indifferent. I mentioned a very low price. The old man's eyes as pulled together and I saw how it shone in the slots. Anita came in. She greeted awkwardly and was about to go out again when the old man shouted at her to bring in a can of the best beer. The old man meant the price was still too high. The beer bottle had come in and I washed down his talk with good taste. "Oh, you say it, dear father. Then I'll maybe lower it a little. Yes, would you settle for the half? I would keep it for a fair price." The old man took a deep gulp and stroked his sleeve, the foam from his beard. The eyes had become so small, so small. Anita had settled of the spinning wheel, but followed us very closely. She understood what the issue was. It had been talked about many times before in this room. Now she mixed up in conversation. "I think you would be stupid, Antonio, if you got rid of the parcel. It is the best in the whole valley, usually father say." "Quiet, you do not understand such," said the old man. "But if I still would sell it, you have nothing against it, if your father get—" "Stop," said the old man, holding out his hand, "I'll take it. And when will it be started?" he asked with a sly smile. "Just now, if you want. The harvest is yours." "Well, I can call a lawful business. And the payment?" "That I want in the new year, because I thought you were going to hold the wedding of Anita and me, and then I need to get some new in the house." Old man's face clouded. "I know it was you who got the girl to break up with Schaefer, and that I do not thank you for. But so does Anita, and you should also do so, because it had not been any luck with one of those hawks, either for her or for the farm if he would one day come to settle down here. He has money, it is true, but he also have the ability to move them, and it usually ends in misery. Were you glad I gave him the passport from here? I had an earlier promise to Anita, and I do not let one of those dance champions push me off. But you have never spoken to me or mother about it. I do now, dear father. What do you say, Anita? I have always been in love with Antonio, but I thought he had forgotten me." And then, she did not finish the sentence, but came and took my hand. I pulled her to me and kissed the beautiful bright hair. "Now you can see for yourself, father. What God has united the people shall not divide." "Well, then, may God bless you then." He went to the door and shouted, "Mother, mother," came in, "you hear?" Soon thereafter my mother died in a slowly debilitating disease. I was now the sole owner of farm and began eagerly to equip it to worthily receive Anita. The wedding was exposed for Christmas. The only one who was not happy was Viola. She lamented much her mother, and mother secretly went and mourned over my choice of wife. She and Anita had never really understood each other. Viola was a still, binding nature with a strong pronounced sense of justice. Anita was a moment's child. Laughter and tears shifted more often than sunshine and rain, and her lively temper could easily entice her to small follies. Maybe it was just her variable temperament that beguiled me, and probably also the beautiful eyes that I could never see myself enough of. Now she was mine. The melancholy which had been on us and the whole farm during mother's long disease, now gave way to an exuberant joy and merriment. The local youth gathered happy with us, and went to the dance late into the night at violins and flute sound. But it was not quite the success I had dreamed of, and I did not get hold of it in Anita's heart as I desired. She slipped away from me and there was never any real intimacy between us. Moreover, she was irritable-tempered and did not take kindly that I joked with the girls at hands. She could, however, allow herself much as she would never have forgiven me. At one point, when we had joy at home and I had danced with the beautiful Lucia and still stood with my hand on her, I suddenly felt a painful stick on the outside of the hand. I jumped and looked around. It was Anita. "Why do you stick me?" I asked. "It looked so good when you held your hand on her, so that I thought I would stick it with a pin," she replied with a smile, which was as sharp as the needle. On another occasion, when we amused ourselves with archery, a common theme when youth came together on a summer day, Anita suggested that there would be a race to see who was the best shooter. Everyone who wanted to could get 3 arrows, and the achieved the highest hit rates should be called master and kiss the girl he liked, thought looked best. It was the price. "Are you with me on this, both the boys and girls?" asked Anita. Now she was in her best disposition. "Yes, yes." It was a good suggestion, and everyone laughed. It was among the shooters a handsome boy named Andreas Kafer from the mountain. He was known as the boldest and most skilled among the Alps stones hunters, but he was also very shy to girls. He shot 3 dots and no one could make him the rank unconstitutional. "He is the best competitor," cried Anita. "Come forward and take the loot of who you want." He brushed off his cap and looked around but did not budge. "Well, Andreas, how is it going, dare you not?" cried the other boys in mouth of each other. Finally he took courage and went right up to my wife, took her hand and kissed it. But she took him by the neck, pulled him close and kissed him on mouth. "You will easily have a real kiss, you have honestly earned. That does not fit well. Anita is not a girl," one dared to object. Anita blushed up to the hairline, turned on her heels and ran away. The whole thing was a very innocent play, but there was something in Anita's behavior that touched me uncomfortable. I had a feeling that she arranged the competition with calculation, it would go as it went. A year had passed. It was still and quiet in the yard. We went and waited for Anita to become mother. It had been more softness her being, and she hung herself happy in my neck, to which she said, to cry out her concerns and her happiness. I did everything to cheer and delight her and facilitate her work. This tenderness touched her, for she was in the bottom of a weak nature, and she joined me more than before. But simultaneously could under the soft surface, certain hardnesses arrive, that betrayed how it sometimes simmered in depth. She was on such occasions not really himself mighty. I wrote it on her condition, and was just so much more tender towards her. When she became calm again, she could reproach herself everything she'd said and did and ask me for forgiveness. Then she was so touchingly tender and sweet. On the whole, this was my happiest time. I felt that Anita was mine, that she needed me, she was fond of me, that I could be there for her support and the pleasure she craved. But our happiness was not long-lasting. One evening, Anita had gone alone over to her parents who lived a quarter of an hour away from us. She was long gone and I started to get worried. Finally she comes in with urgent steps and terrified countenance. "What is it, my love? I saw 3 men lurking outside here." "Did they do anything?" "No, they crept behind something when I arrived. It looked like they had bad things in the mind." "Oh, it's probably no danger. Did you recognize any of them?" "I do not know, but I just thought I recognized one of them, when he turned around and looked after me." "Who was it?" "Do not go out, Antonio. I think it was him." My blood came in swelling. I grabbed me a cudgel and rushed out before Anita could stop me. It was moonlight and a light covering of snow lay over the ground so you could see quite clearly also at longer distances. I went the same route as Anita had come, but I had not gone long before I heard running footsteps behind me. I turned quickly, and stood with face to face with Arnold Schaefer. It shone a vicious fire in his eyes. Behind him stood two men I did not know. "Now I have you," he roared. "Now you get to the wedding feast, you rascal. Tie him," he shouted to the men. "The first thing that comes close to me, I will break head on," I replied and turned my cudgel. One of his henchmen took a leap toward me, and before the other could come to his assistance, fell my cudgel with such power over his shoulder that he sank bottom. The second immediately took to flight, but Arnold himself could not escape. I grabbed him collar and flung him like a glove on the slopes. "Oh, you're with mercenary arms and want to bind me, when your milk fingers too weak. That I will get rid of." He was more agile than I thought and came suddenly on his feet again, threw her coat and drew a stiletto from his gain. It was a wild game, but I swung my cudgel more agile than his weapons, and the end was that I with a sharp blow crushed his legs. There he lay, could not move, but he was screaming help, help as much as his lungs could. I went home and said to my two farmhands to span for a car and drive the two beaten to the inn in the village and then go to a doctor who lived an hour away from there and ask him to come and join them. No witnesses, but my opponents affirmed all three it was me who attacked them as they come peacefully walking on the road. They had either done or wanted to hurt me. Day before they had come to the neighborhood as traveling and settled at an inn, and at a walk in the evening, they had been assaulted and mutilated. Arnold Schaefer had right knee crushed, and the other had received clavicle brackish. Since the fight at the wedding feast was still fresh in the memory, I had the glow against me. Whatever I insured did not, I was convicted of aggravated assault on a public road, to 1 year of imprisonment. Coated with handcuffs and shackles, as a crook, I was removed to a detention center in Chambery. Anita was beside herself with despair. Viola was paralyzed with grief. I clenched teeth. The bitterness I felt was too large to be clothed in words. What time is long between the walls of the prison, the year one was in jail seemed to me never wanting out. And meanwhile germinated and grew bitterness in my soul. Sometimes I could crumble and beat me bloody against the cold wall, but there was no one who cared about it. After such outbreak, I was for some time lethargic and apathetic. My fellow prisoners were afraid of me, though I never did them any harm. My guardian hated me and kept me so severely they could. The only one who showed me any kindness was a fellow prisoner named Pierre, who had been sentenced to 10 years imprisonment for the manslaughter of a rival. He was the most good-natured soul you could see, but only once had the hate mine flowed over him, and he got it atone with 10 long years behind discipline housing walls. The similarity in our destiny brought us together and he became finally a real friend. Many months had passed without hearing anything from my home. What did I know happening out there in the world? My world was a dungeon that measured steps in length and width. Was Anita dead? Had she severed all ties which was no longer her worthy? Had she given birth to our child? Would I ever have it in my arms? Would well even dare going back to our valley and my pretty little farm? The inmates was branded for life. What could I take me to when I was free, gnawing tanks that never left me in peace? One day in late autumn came the jailer and told me that a woman wanted to talk to me. She waited for me in the anteroom. It was Viola. She had walked on her feet long route to Chambery and after much fighting with the authorities finally received permission to meet me. Picture, Chambery supposedly in the late century of 1800, it means ca 300 years after this story happened in this region. "Antonio. Is it really you? Your hair's grey," was her first exclamation when she got to see me. Now came in short sentences her story. Anita was dead. She had had a difficult and premature birth shortly after the accident affected me. The child, a little girl, lived only a few days. Anita came up again, but was broken in both body and soul. She was melancholy and closed, and laid no hand at anything. Viola, who, since Anita moved into the mistress of the farm, considered herself redundant and lived a reclusive life in the chamber, had then to take the lead if not all would be adrift. But this saw Anita with no benevolence, and the tension between them became greater than ever. "Did she ever try to find me?" I asked. "No, she was so strange. She could never mention your name. One time I said to her, however, she should ponder that it was for her sake you got into that accident." "It was not," she replied. "It was his violent temper, that I was always so afraid of. Had he not so violently broken into my life, had I been a respected and honored wife in far better conditions. Now I dare not to look people in the face, they are pointing the finger at me, to my husband sitting in the prison." I told her that it probably was not true, but rather think all sin about you because you got for harsh punishment. But she went weeping away from me without answering. "Have you asked something of him, the third one, which pretty much is owed to all our accidents?" "Yes, he once came to the farm and asked to speak with Anita. She was not home, but I received him. He was on crutches, for the damage you inflicted on him had been so severe that the doctor would have had to take the leg above the knee, which was far crushed. This he told me during threatening tantrums. 'He would probably notice when you be out again,' he said. I said to the janitor to show him out, and as far as I know he never met Anita. He traveled on the same day from the area. Violet talked about many other things that happened during my absence, but I heard hardly at her, so busy was I by the words Anita made about me. 'Oh, so could she say about me,' I mumbled. 'Thus, I was nothing to her?' 'I think anyway that she in a way loved you, but she was so strange, so full of contradictions. She had not woken up to the clearness of herself. But now she's gone and I wish for myself to excuse her. Must also you be able to? You may believe me or not, sister, but I tell you that I love this woman, and the one you love needs no indulgence. But, tell me, how did she die? It is a sad story that I most wanted to spare you, but once after truth emerges. She became more and more gloomy and brooding, did not respond to speech, or if she said there was little sense in what she said. I think she was a little unhinged. An evening she went out without saying a word and did not return. I searched for her all night but without result. The next day found her hat down at the bridge tap, and some days later she floated up a distance below the bridge. I sat as if paralyzed, unable to utter a word. Again a debt burden on my already heavily burdened shoulders. Viola proceeded to tell me everything that happened, but I heard her not. For me, it was so terribly hard that I now also had debt in Anita's death. How, she said, had I not forcibly broken me into her life so? Yes, it was my fault, that was what brought both her and me into the accident. Violet tried to console me. With all the tenderness of her nature, she was also powerful, she tried to convince me the courage to start a new life when I came out again. "You have no more than 4 months to go," she said, "then I'll come and pick you up, and we two should have it so good together on our little farm, is it not so? I'm never more to go to our farm, as much as you know. You may take it and possess it as your own. What will you then do?" "I do not know. The wild animals have their dens and lairs. Well, there is some hiding place even for me. Poor Viola. She went deeply grieved away from me. Then I never saw her again. The more liberty I approached, the more worried I became. Why did I not stay and die within these walls? Was I then forced to go out among the people, begging for their mercy and meet their contempt? What life can be cruel?" The day came. The lock came off, the door was opened, and I had to go where I pleased. In the forest, the mountains, only not among people. It was my goal, and I went as whipped by furies until I reached a relatively sparsely populated region. But with two empty hands, I could not do much. Desperate conditions lead to desperate things. I robbed and stole until I had equipped me with the tools and weapons and clothing against the winter cold. An abandoned, almost ramshackle hut on a slope mountain pasture became my first sanctuary. The wildlife was plentiful and I was a good archer, so I did not have to starve. With flint and steel and a good axe, I did not freeze, but the loneliness, the terrible loneliness that I could not stand.